This is the Reading Instruction Show. I am your host, as always, the genial one, Dr. Andy Johnson. The title of today's podcast is called The Ample Testimony of Reading. Now, to fully understand this current reading crisis, which really isn't a crisis at all, it has to be seen in the context of similar crises occurring in the past, which also weren't really crises at all. This current crisis is not the first reading crisis to come along, and it certainly won't be the last. And when this crisis runs its course, there will be a lull, followed by another crisis, and then another, and then another, and another. That's because there will always be those willing to create the illusion of crisis for political and economic gain. And sadly, it's an effective tactic. Well, for a time anyway. Now, the current reading crisis is a subtle variation of the McCarthyism of the 50s. Substitute balanced literacy or whole language for communism, and you got yourself a crisis that threatens the fabric of our nation. You can almost hear Joe McCarthy telling the press, "I've got a list of whole language practitioners who have infiltrated our public universities. They've created a deep three-queuing system, state. Their stated goal is to force young children to guess at words and look at pictures." And you can almost hear Joseph Welch asking, "Have you no sense of decency? At long last, Emily Hanford, have you left no sense of decency?" Now, I'm old enough to remember A Nation at Risk. This was a report written by the National Commission on Excellence in Education in 1983. The commission was a group of people selected by Terrell Bell, who was then the Secretary of Education under Ronald Reagan. This group of grumpy warriors was charged with the task of writing a report to describe what was, quote, "seriously remiss in our educational system," unquote. In other words, they were told to write a report describing how bad our schools and teachers were. And I say, mission accomplished. From page 18, I quote, "We conclude that declines in educational performance are in large part the result of disturbing inadequacies in the way the educational process itself is conducted," unquote. Now, apparently, the disturbing inadequacies of schools was so bad that our nation was put at risk. Imagine that. The commission concluded that bad teaching was the cause of an economic, technical, and security decline of our nation. Again, randomly assigning causality. However, such reports shouldn't be taken seriously. The 1983 report, like the many government reports that would follow, was a political act and not an academic act. Very much like Emily Hanford's reporting today, it was a pseudo-intellectual game of confirmation bias based on anecdotal evidence and decontextualized data, cherry-picked to paint a predetermined picture. Like Emily Hanford's reporting today, the 1983 report was based on the false assumption that there were, quote, declines in educational performance, unquote. And like Emily Hanford's work today, it would not pass the muster of blind peer review. For example, the commission reported that, quote, there was a steady decline in science achievement scores of U.S. 17-year-olds, as measured by national assessments of science in 1969, 1973, and 1977, unquote. Now, this is technically true, but purposefully inaccurate. In 1983, the NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress, had collected long-term data on three subject areas, reading, math, and science, for three age groups, ages 9, 13, and 17. This means they had 9 data sources to use. However, the commission reported only the science scores for 17-year-olds. And why were the other 8 data sources excluded? Because this was the only data source, the one data source that showed any decline. Now, this practice is called selected statistics. It's a trick commonly used to make a case for something that isn't. Here, there's an array of statistical data available to describe something, but only the data that will make the case, that will make one's case, is reported. It's like describing an elephant only by using measurements from its trunk. It's technically true, but purposefully inaccurate. Also, education doesn't happen in a vacuum. There were a whole bunch of other things going on in the late 60s and early 70s that may have just been weighing on the minds of 17-year-old kids, like the Vietnam War, getting drafted, the sexual revolution, drugs, and the massive social change taking place. It's really a testament to the teachers of the time that there weren't declines in other subject areas. Now, selected statistics is a trick commonly used today. A 2023 NPR report had the headline, U.S. reading and math scores dropped to lowest level in decades. Now, this is an alarming headline, yes? And technically, it's true. Yes, reading and math scores for both 4th and 8th grade students in 2023 were about where they were in 2000. And yes, 2 decades have passed since 2000. This is technically true, but purposefully inaccurate. Scores rose steadily from 1971 to 2022. But even after the COVID decline of 2020, scores were still higher in 2023 than they were in 1971. The only statistically significant decline occurred during the COVID years from 2020 to 2022. Now, back to the commission. The 1983 commission reported that, quote, the educational dimensions of the risk before us have been amply documented in testimony received by the commission, unquote, page 11. Ample testimony is used today by state legislatures to get information before passing these science of reading bills. But in science, in real science, it doesn't really matter how ample the testimony or the level of documentation. Because at the end of the day, it's testimony, not research. Testimony is people saying things. Testimony is people giving their account of things or their opinion on things. Testimony is the personal stories of people. And yes, testimony can be very compelling. It can even be amply documented. But at the end of the day, It's merely an ample documentation of things that people have said. Neither the testimony nor the ampleness of the documentation asserts any influence as to the truth or accuracy of the thing being said. Testimony is not research. And as we have seen, the science of reading standard for making decisions about reading practice and policy is not amply documented testimony. Instead, they tell us that decisions must be made based on controlled experimental or quasi-experimental research conducted in a classroom setting and used to establish a causal link between one thing and the other. Now, 40 years after that 1983 report, we see the same playbook still being used. Small bits of individual data are pulled out of context, misinterpreted, and generalized to larger populations. Personal accounts, emotional stories, and anecdotal evidence are substituted for actual research. While amply documented testimony can make compelling television, it's hardly the stuff of science. And it should be the science of reading, not the ample testimony of reading. This has been the Reading Instruction Show. I am your host, Dr. Andy Johnson.